Hello, and welcome to My Streaming Bubble. You know, that podcast where I talk about the shows I love with the people I tolerate. I'm your host, Jen, and today, returning to the bubble are the amazingly fierce hosts of the podcast, A Nightmare on Fear Street, Trent and Sheree, and we're heading back to school again, specifically to Rydell High to learn all about the Pink Ladies Code and Cool Riders and the cult classic sequel to one of the most well-known movie musicals ever, the movie that gets you prowling and asks, why aren't we doing it for our country? Grease 2. Welcome, you guys.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you for having us back for this.
Absolutely. Thank you for agreeing to do this. I did give them the option to not cover Grease 2, but you guys were all for it. And thank you so much for that. Yeah.
I feel like we just have to keep doing Maxwell Caulfield movies now because we came in with Empire Records. We're doing Grease 2. We're just going to get on his resume every time we're here. Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I was like, what else is there?
If he has a horror movie, we can like have a crossover event. You come over for that. So we'll go, like, we're still doing Maxwell only, but also.
Oh my God. That'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I'm going to go down as IMDb.
Yeah. Right. My letterbox for Grease 2 after I watched it this time was, well, at least he's hot.
Yeah, right? It's like, oh, I get it. Sexy Rexy can get it.
Listen, so. I was like, he's a cool writer already. We're talking about Michelle. Right? We're talking about...
So before we get into it, and for those that may not know, do you guys want to tell us a little bit about your podcast and where you can be found?
Ooh, yes. We are A Nightmare on Fear Street. You can find us on Twitter at Nightmare Fears, Instagram at A Nightmare on Fear Street, because I make us use our whole name over there because they're not as cool as Twitter used to be. Or is Twitter, we're still calling Twitter. I don't know what it'll be called when this comes out because she's been going through a lot of things lately, as a lot of our friends do.
I'm done with you. I'm done. I've deleted it. I deleted my app today. I'm done with him.
Listen,
can't do X.
Oh, God,
she's gonna
so
keep
dumb.
Changing her wig and coming into the room, and I'm gonna see her through it like a good friend does.
There you go.
You'll have to let me know if she gets better. When she gets better, I'll come back then. But
this
now.
Is her Gail Weathers bang era, and we need to respect that and look away. Our podcast covers through intersectional lenses, and we just turned 3 the first week of August this year, so we're out of the terrible twos and we're into the finger paints. Yeah.
Well, awesome. Congratulations on 3 years, and seriously, everyone should go check it out. It's a great time. You're gonna have a lot of fun, and for me personally, I always love the hot takes. Those are always so much fun to listen to, so
thank you. I love the episodes where the whole episode's a hot take on accident. And then our hot takes are just cold. Yeah. Because it's like, well, now that I've insulted him and his family line, let me also say the editing was weird.
Yeah. Or the times we're like, oh, we've already said our hot take. Let me try to think of something on top of
my head. So many we have to have an extra hot takes. We just have to.
Just, yeah, an extra side dish of hot takes. Yeah, I like
a bag of hot takes to reach into. These 5 were taken, but this one, I stand on this one.
It's like a bonus hot take. I like it. So as I said, we are talking about Grease 2, starring Michelle Pfeiffer, Maxwell Caulfield, Adrian Zemed, Lorna Luft, Pamela Adlon, Christopher McDonald, and several others. It's available on many streamers and free at your local library. And I'd also like to give a shout out to the writers. Writing credits go to Ken Finkelman, who also wrote Airplane, the sequel. And then Jim Jacobs and Warren Casey. And they wrote the original Grease, like I was going to say the musical, but it's all a musical. But you know what I mean. All right. So this is the spoiler warning / brief synopsis. What IMDb says. A British student at a 1960s American high school must prove himself to the leader of a girls' gang whose members can only date greasers. What I says is, this is my favorite Grease movie and soundtrack, and I love it for all its good, bad, and just downright what the fuckery. I still have questions. I love poking holes in the story and continuity and plot,
so
but
many.
It makes so fucking many. But it makes me smile and laugh, and I I sing along to all the songs. And I used to do the cool writer, I guess, air quotes, dance, not with a ladder, but I would mime a ladder climb. So I love this movie. I will always love this movie. And that is This Pink Lady's Pledge. So have you guys seen this movie before?
I've seen it a couple times as a child, but for the most part, back then, Grease was the one that was on HBO and Cinemax and everything. So I was very familiar with that one. So when I finally saw this one, when I was like a tween, I was like, it's not the same. But I own that I have a bias. And so I decided to see it as an adult and see if I still feel the same. So this was a fun experiment for me.
Nice.
I had only ever seen clips of this and heard some of the music, but I'd never seen the whole thing all the way through. And now I know why. But, the other part of my Letterboxd review was, are the straights okay?
No.
This movie, y'all, this movie, I will say, comparing it to the first one, because I also don't love Grease. Like, that is a hot take for me, I guess. I don't love either of these films. I went into this one because I do adore Michelle Pfeiffer. Even though I love Olivia Newton-John too, Michelle Pfeiffer is everything. And Maxwell Caulfield is so hot. So I was excited. And there were some numbers that got me. I especially loved the group choreo numbers. Those were really fun. But y'all, that reproduction song, what the hell did I watch? It also felt really rapey, and
lot of the movie did. And I know as a kid, I didn't catch that theme, because as a kid, you're just like, okay.
Oh, yeah.
But as an adult, I'm like, oh.
I realized, I'm just like, I'm watching it, and I'm like, how did I never realize exactly how fucking horny this movie is? I mean, yeah, reproduction, do it for the country, but like, literally everyone and everything is... they're just on the verge of just fucking something. I swear to God.
Right. And that's kind of one of my notes, is because I feel like the reason that this one is so different from the other one, aside from it being written by different people, because like, it's not the same when it comes to music. I'm going to go ahead and remind people, I'm not a musical girl. I was a theater kid, not a musical girl. But like, Grease is one of those that like stuck up on me in my youth. And so I have an affinity for it. And so I will like bop to it, because there are some songs. I feel like the way to get non-musical people into a musical is to have songs that work. Mm-hmm. And the first one has that. This one has some songs that are fun, but it's all mostly group numbers. And that takes away, because the first one, you get to like know the characters, because mm-hmm. you're like, okay. So the first one, we had very clear plot A, plot B, plot C, and it connects to the overall thesis. This one is kind of just like, everybody should be singing and dancing at all times. And I'm like, okay, I love people getting paid.
I love a choreo.
Love it. But yeah. Also, like, what am I supposed to be learning about who here? Because it's all just like, do it for the country, reproduction. We're going back to school. And so we lose some of the luster of the first one. I think that's why people are so angry at this one. I'm not angry at this one. I'm just, it's not the first one.
It's just so different. It's so different. Yeah.
I will say,
if she was her own girl, she would probably get a lot less hate. But like, she was like, we're going to do Grease as well. And we were like, that's not Grease. This is mm-hmm. something else.
Yeah.
You got pink jackets, but yeah.
I will say there were two group numbers that worked for me that I thought should be in there, but the rest of them I think could have been cut. But like the opening number, we're going back to school. That was fun. There was some fun choreo in that. And you want to start a show with a big bang, like a big moment. So I liked that. And I liked, even though I know it's problematic now, but like the luau.
Oh yeah,
beach party, that dance number. I know the wows are problematic, but like mm-hmm. That dance number was really cool. So because that's kind of at the climax of the film. So you kind of want a big group opening number and a big group climax number, similar to what the first one did with what's that song called? We're Living
Summer 11.
Yeah, well, the one she comes
and
out.
You're the one that I want.
Yeah, you're the one that mm-hmm. I want. So I did like those. But the ones in the middle, I was like, this is just weird.
This one just needed some focus. I feel like if this one had some focus, I could make an argument for the script. But we're like, we're going to reverse what we did in the first one, but we're not really going to focus on them enough. Because if you really look at it, I've watched this twice for this, because I came back and it watched me sort of, and I was like, I need to like take a note. So I watched it again. And I was like, we lose our two leads for most of the movie. And it's not because we're learning about other people or anything. We're just like doing group shit. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, but shouldn't they have some scenes together? Because they don't have chemistry. And I want to root for them. And that's not a read because we've seen both of those actors do many things. And they do have chemistry with other people. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if they didn't like each other or because it's one of their like earlier movies for both of them. They hadn't really figured out how to be romantic on screen yet.
They apparently did not like each other. They did not like each other. And then also what I've read is that like Didi Khan comes back as Frenchie. And then about halfway through the movie, she poof disappears. It's because when they started filming, the script wasn't even finished.
It feels like it. It feels yeah. like it. It feels like Scream 3 energy, you know, where you're just like, we're just making it up as we go. Because again,
absolutely.
The first one had so much focus that like I, even though I don't like musicals, I was like, this is a script. I can follow this script. It makes sense to me in my writer brain. And so I see why people love it. I see why I probably latched onto it, even though I don't like musicals as a kid. Even as a kid, I didn't like musicals. And nobody dies in it. And I was all about murder as a child even.
Right.
And so I was like, why am I here?
You think he did for a hot second.
In the there's theories about the first one. I read some theories about Grease 1. One of which is that Sandy died and Danny didn't save her. So his throwaway line in the opening song about how she almost drowned. Mm-hmm. She did. Mm-hmm. And it's all a dream. This magical realism. Right. I just took the magical realism as it's a musical and I don't ask questions. But like,
yeah,
Reddit was like, no. Right.
And I agree, though. This was just too, like, trying too many things, like throwing spaghetti at the wall to see what sticks. And some of it worked and some of it did not. The other thing I will say, because I'm a little bit more of a musical person than Sheree,
yes,
but I still wouldn't consider myself a big, huge musical person. I'm very picky with the ones that I like. And let's face it, like I said, Maxwell Caulfield is hot. He's a good actor. Michelle Pfeiffer is like queen status. But can we not cast singers? Like, there's a whole Hollywood. And these are the two you give me in a musical. Like, John Travolta and Olivia Newton-John can sing really well. These two,
they tried. They tried. And, you know, and I will always be mad at this movie for not giving Lorna Luft her own song. The twins got a song singing about some douchebag named Brad. It's like, you needed to give Paulette more because she had some fucking... She's Judy Garland's daughter, for God's sakes. Let her fucking sing.
Listen, mistakes were made. But again, I see why it has the cult appeal because like I'm a Rocky Horror Picture Girl. I don't know why. Because again, I don't like musicals. Maybe it's just the Tim Curry of it all. He gets me to do a lot of things I don't want to do. but I see why it's a cult classic because like there is something there that they just didn't give the time and space to because... I think that part of why I'm just like, is because it does feel like this did really well. We need a sequel. Let's go. As opposed to we have more story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And I read some of the ideas they had before their actors wouldn't come back. And I was like, some of those make sense. But also, like, if you have to go to, like, your fourth or fifth idea, maybe you cool it. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you just let it go. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, this was from... Because there was like a really good article on Entertainment Weekly that I read the other day when they did an interview with like a lot of the cast for like its 40th anniversary. And everything just sounded like it was a fucking mess. They were, you know, and the actors themselves were all horny. And Adrian Zmes, like everyone was kind of hooking up off camera and everything. And, you know, we were horny. I was like, clearly. But I just... Oh, man. So, like, the first time that I saw this movie was late at night in the 90s on, like, TBS or TNT or something. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And then we get to the bowling alley scene, the score tonight. And there's a really weird cut edit where after Johnny hits the strike and then next thing you know, he's jumping and, like, the audio gets cut off. So I always thought, like, oh, what got edited out for TV? Nothing. So after all of that, I was just like, okay, now I know what kind of movie this is. Now I know what I'm in for. I'm not going to take it too seriously. It's going to be just a fun, goofy time. And it's so fucked up and I still love it so much. Yeah.
I, I, def- definitely, I'm not mad at this movie again. I can't stress that because like we all want more time at Rydell. And I don't think it's like a dumpster fire where it's like, I gotta look away. I'm just, it's more musical. I think that a lot of musical kids are into this because it does have the group numbers. It does have the spectacle. And I'm like a girl who wants a story and a character. Mm-hmm. And so when you lose the two leads, and I'm just like, who are these people? What mm-hmm. are they about? Like, we don't, again, the first one had such beautiful ABC, very clear. Because you got Sandy and Danny, you got Kanicki and Rizzo, who's mm-hmm. not pretending to queen. When she said she wasn't coming back, I would have folded my company. And you have Frenchie bringing up the C story as somebody who's also lost, but not trying to hook up with somebody. Mm-hmm. And so we got to know those five of nobody else. And we could know the other girls because of the way they're utilized. Whereas this one, I'm just like, I know they're all out here and I see some of them and some of their like accessories and they keep singing, but I don't know them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, we didn't need to know all that shit about Lewis and how he just was so fucking horny.
Everybody was. Like, right? That doesn't make him special.
Yeah. It's like, I didn't really need to know anything else about any of the other T-Birds, you know?
That's my other thing. Because the T-Birds, I feel by having Maxwell Caulfield's character, whose name I just forgot, Michael. Mm-hmm. Wow. I forgot Michael. I'm doing great today. by having Michael outside of the group, it also was part of the reason why we were fighting for focus. Because in the first one, Sandy's not a pink lady, but she is a pink lady. And so we have reasons for them to all hang out. Whereas Michael was trying to get his ass kicked the whole movie. And then riding around on a motorcycle, he magically had a ride.
Yep.
And so he was a lone ranger. And so I was like, we already are losing people. We need to like bring some people together somehow, some way. And not just for the musical numbers.
There was a lot of like, oh, and now he's doing this. And now he's doing that. And now mm-hmm. we're flying off the cliff of a motorcycle. Like,
how do people never hear his motorcycle? He's just upon them with a lighter trying to be smooth. I'm like, did you not see or hear a giant motorcycle mm-hmm. coming at you? Like,
She was so caught up in who that guy was. And one of my favorite lines out of that song is, it really doesn't matter that I haven't seen his face. And it's like, you know, good for you for not like letting looks hold you back. That one. And then, when you mentioned a reproduction, the fact that they had Tab Hunter say lusty dust always will fucking crack me up. How the lusty dust or how the something gets its lusty dust onto this stamen. Anyway.
I was waiting for all those babies. I was like, this song is not preparing you for the real world. You'll all be pregnant for the credits are rolling. I mm-hmm. need to follow the outside.
Obviously this whole movie is super heteronormative, but it's also like very, that song was just, the whole time I was sitting in this couch right here, just like, what the fuck was going on in this movie? What is happening? Because like it starts and you're like, okay, it's a song.
Strong opening, four tops. Yeah, you're like,
and
all
then
right.
We're like, have sex with me right now because I want it. And the girls are like, no. And then the girls are like, oh, what I did it.
Yeah, because then the girls are imitating the boys and the boys right. are, yeah. And it's just like, yeah. It's so silly.
We also just forgot what it's like to be the outsider in high school. And I, as a homeschool person, I never thought I'd have to remind people. But like, our pink ladies and our T-Birds, would they really be at the talent show? Like,
well, in the T-Birds,
they're gangs.
Well, and the T-Birds are also jocks, you know, because in the beginning, they're on the football field with Sid Caesar because he comes back for a couple of minutes. And they're pushing the football-y thing. And all I could think was like, Danny Zuko really paved the way for greasers to be jocks. And, you know, I guess he's a trailblazer in that sense.
It's like in the first one, they were outsiders, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. They were supposed to still be in this one. But for whatever reason, we forgot that. And now they're like, let's do the talent show and let's play sports. But we're still a gang. And our ladies are our ladies. Nobody else can touch them or we'll beat you up. Well, and I'm just like, are you a gang or are you an award-winning high school student? Like, pick or choose.
They were kind of the bad boys in quotation marks, because like there was that other group in the talent show that was like singing
the prep tones, yeah, the preppy ones,
yeah. And so, and they were like, we gotta be like them or something. And so it's like, and like, were they getting money for the talent show if they won?
No, it's high school
or records.
Why did they care?
Because they were getting records, and Goose was hoping for a shitload of Roy Orbison like 45s, and then they had to split it. See, I've seen this movie a few hundred times. So then, yeah, but then they had to split it with Stephanie, who herself won the female portion of the talent show with her. And this is one of the parts that always just will fucking confuse the shit out of me. Is she starts singing her sad song and she hallucinates Michael, but it's like, who's singing Michael's parts? Like,
and what is happening on stage? Like,
because they clap, and I'm like, this girl is crying, having a breakdown, and y'all are like, yay, drama, cinema, give us everything.
And it's like,
that's
I'm not
Michelle.
And I've never been like, I like some musicals. It's not, I don't like hate them, but I don't run towards them. So because that's always something that I can't wrap my head around is the how everyone knows the song and the dance numbers, and then they just go about their business. But this, that one's too much. I can't suspend anything for that one.
That song that the Pink Ladies do in the talent show is trash. But also, usually in musicals, and what makes the singing work is that there's a heightened emotional moment that the only way this character or these characters can express that emotion is through song. That's kind of the idea behind just music and musicals, period. But I don't think they got that memo. This one was like, we're putting a song here. We got to have a luau song, because luau.
Yeah. And like,
It felt very much like that high school teacher who has been told they're going to write and produce and direct a high school musical for the kids, and they should figure it out. Mm-hmm. That's what it gives. And sometimes those are a good time for various reasons. And that's what this was like. I'm like, I'm not mad at it, but also I have questions, comments, and concerns. But like a couple of songs I'm into, mm-hmm. A couple, not as much as the first one, which again, I think is part of the divide, because people hate this movie, like paying into some people's personalities.
Right.
And I get it. The music's not the same, because there's not a song on the first one where if you say a line from it, people are going to go, oh yeah, and want to sing the rest. Whereas this one, it's like, we did go back to school, yes.
Yeah.
Did we want a cool writer. She did.
Yeah.
Can we talk about our favorite songs? Because I think it's, I have Absolutely. A feeling that our favorites are probably all going to be the same, because so as a song, Cool Rider, hands down, like it feels like Pat Benatar should be singing it, but like I jive with that song. Like I could hear that on the radio and be like, all right, Cool Rider.
Mm-hmm.
But what's y'all's favorite?
Sure.
You go.
Cool Rider. I learned that whole scene, like I said, and I would like kind of dance along with it and mime climbing the ladder and doing the little jazz hand things and her little like hop skippy things at the end. So, and when I was younger, I'm not sure where it came from, but I remember being in like sixth grade and kind of having this idea of like a cool rider or being a biker's old lady kind of thing. Maybe I saw Grease 2 when I was much, much younger and don't remember it, but I was all about like that biker life, and not so much anymore, but so Cool Rider came up and I was like, I'm a horny teenager. I was like, yeah, Cool Rider. And yeah, Michelle Pfeiffer's just cool as fuck in this movie. Just, oh my God, her hair is amazing. I cannot get enough of her fucking hair.
I've never seen her so young as this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, never. This had to be around the same time she did Scarface, because like, or was it Carlito's Way? I get them mixed up, but she was one of those.
Yeah, Scarface.
Yeah. And she looks basically the same, but with more makeup. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, girl, you need to start aging. And she's like, no, I think about it in the 90s.
Sheree, what's your favorite?
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Back to School. I think that it's fun and it like builds up all this energy and this pacing that we don't get the rest of the movie. Cause like one of my issues, y'all know, I don't like movies that are over an hour and a half. You know, when that happens, I'm like, the pacing, and I'm looking at the pacing, I'm looking the director in the eyeballs, and directors are like, I don't know who you are. And I'm like, why are you doing this scene for 8 minutes? And so I feel like that song, because it was just enough, and it had like the pace I wanted the rest of the movie, and we never got. Because like, if you look at this scene by scene, some of these scenes are way too damn long. Some of these songs have like weird breaks, and I'm just like, girl, let me go home. I want to stop.
I agree. That would be my second favorite song. I will say too, during the Cool Rider scene, when she gets out of the building and she's just skipping down the road, and I'm like, no one is even looking at her.
Exactly. Like
chicken walking out of the building. And I feel like that, because like usually I'm good about suspending my disbelief and being like, oh, it's a musical, blah, blah, blah. But when you have extras there and they're just like, oh, how was your Tuesday? What'd you do last night? Oh, did you catch the latest episode? And she's just like,
like, I would have been like, what's she on? Like,
I would have been like, the hell?
Is that Frenchie's side business? I want like two of those.
What's your least favorite song? Mine's Reproduction. Absolutely, hands down.
Trey?
I'm gonna go with the final song, because like I wanted a better song for the ending to sort of bookend what we opened with.
My least favorite is Charades, the one Michael sings, because he's singing it in his head, so you can barely fucking, I don't like it. I don't kind of, like, I get the point of it, but it's hard to hear him and understand what he's saying. And he's like, just all in his head.
Song. It felt like a song, like what would be in a regular film. You know what I mean? There's no lip syncing to it. There's no performance of the song.
Yeah.
That's why it felt weird to me too.
Yeah.
It was a callback to Sandy's song when she goes to see them race the cars. Mm-hmm. And as they were talking to Danny, she talks to Frenchie and then like finish her song in her head and then runs off.
Yeah. Okay.
And I'm like, you don't have to mirror everything about that movie when you're not mirroring anything about that movie.
Mm-hmm. Like, exactly. Well,
I do like that they kind of flipped it on its head, that the boy is the newcomer and the one that's like, doesn't fit in, but like, yeah, I don't know.
I got thoughts. Thought number one, what are the odds that Sandy's cousin would be British and come to the same school in America?
Also, his accent, y'all.
Yeah.
Well, his accent.
Because Sandy was Australian, yeah. So she's...
His accent was what, like in and out, but not really British. It didn't, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Why did they just say he's from Australia? Sandy's cousin from Australia.
I think they wanted him to be British because he's British, but it was also at that time where people were telling British people not to sound British, which was an ongoing thing, like even when Frasier started. Like, the reason Daphne Moon's accent sounds fake isn't because she's not British, it's because they were like, people can understand you. Can you do this?
Oh, geez.
And so I was like, this is an American actress pretending to be British out my whole childhood. And I grew up like, oh no, America's awful. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, his accent kept throwing me. I was like, what is going on here?
I was just like, what are the odds her cousin would not be from Australia, but would go to the same school she did? And also her and Frenchie keeping in touch 4 years later. Like, how do people keep in contact with people they know 4 years ago in any situation, let alone high school?
Well, and then I also love that, like, you know, Frenchie has agreed to show Michael the ropes, you know, because... relation to Sandy and everything, but like
she leaves him. She's well, like, that, all right, I got
well that and it's like she's back in high school to get her chemistry. What chemistry? That sentence doesn't make any sense. It's incomplete. And why high school? Why don't you just go to fucking community college or something like a normal person?
Listen, GDs are real back then. Like, but she went for a full year, supposedly, even though we only saw her for 2 days. And to fix her product she wants to make. And I'm like, if you're making products, girl, you're ahead of the curve. You don't need to go back to high school. Like, what is... I have questions. Oh, I'm worried for Frenchie.
Oh, yeah.
Also, how far, like, in the future is this from the first one?
4 years.
Yeah, because this was...
So Frenchie is going back to high school as a 22-year-old.
Mm-hmm. To get her chemistry. That's a sentence.
What's that movie with Adam Sandler where he has to go back
Billy
to
Madison.
School? Billy Madison.
Oh, yeah.
Talk about the Billy Madison of it all.
Listen, I was like, there's other ways to get this girl, and I don't know if anybody's talked to you. But that's another... while we're talking about the school year, because this also is a full school year, it does not feel like it. Because the first one, we had markers, and so we felt like we were moving along with them. People got together, they broke up, they got together, they thought they were pregnant. We had a whole year with them. So at the end, when we like ran up in the car, it's like, we went through that. Ooh. Whereas this one, they were like, it's end of the year. It's graduation talent show. I'm like, what does it mean it's a graduation talent show? You've been doing the talent show the whole movie.
Right. And how long did they rehearse for this damn talent show? And
all year, apparently.
Well, and I love that Sharon thought she was still auditioning when she was trying to have the girls do the different seasons. Like, I don't think that's how that works. But I think those moments where they're kind of like rehearsing the girl for all seasons, I think those are supposed to be the markers, because it starts with fall and then winter. And then I don't remember if we see any spring, but then we end with the talent show starting with summer with Paulette's bit. So I think those were supposed to be our little clues, but they're not done well.
Right. I will say the most relatable content in this film was that scene where I think they're still auditioning, or maybe I don't remember. See, it's all muddled in my head. But like, when she cuts her off again, like, I think it's the second or third time she's done this, and she's like, but I just want to show you, because like, she's always late. And I was like, girl, I have been there. I have been there. This bitch is always late and messing up what I gotta do.
Listen, like, there's so many cute lines, and I just wish that we got to, like, know the people who said them a little bit more, because,
I don't know that character's name.
I forgot Michael's name, okay? I'm calling Stephanie Michelle. It's messy. It's messy. And again, it's got big scream-free energy, and so I'm happy to hear that they were still writing it, and it wasn't just me in my head being like, it's not my first one.
Kind of real quick back to the musical numbers, because I think this might be one of the only ones we haven't talked about, but the T-Birds song Prowling at the grocery store.
I blocked that out of my mind.
What the fuck? Was like,
they don't do well when Kaniki and Danny are gone. They just don't. Like, they're in talent shows, they're playing sports, they're hitting up ladies in grocery stores. I'm just like, what is your gang? Do you need a gang, like, PowerPoint so I can help you focus? So y'all can do something?
They're definitely, like, I've always felt like this is definitely, like, a dorkier group of T-Birds. They're definitely not cool. They're not Danny Zuko cool. They're not Kaniki cool. They are, like, even in the beginning, when the other bikers, you know, from the first movie, like the Scorpions, I don't remember what they were, but they gave the main guy a name in this one, Balmudo. But you can tell that Johnny and them are clearly intimidated by these bigger, older badasses. Cause then they're like, you know, trying to talk tough, like, oh, we got to take care of these turkeys, blah, blah, blah. And Johnny's like, tonight we're bowling. You fucking nerd.
Danny Zuko would never.
No, they would have never. Like, again, this movie doesn't understand what they want from this group. And so they're like, they're a gang, but they're invested in their high school.
Another problem.
Duality, yes, but not that way. And they're also like, she's wanting to be different and get outside the group. She don't need any man. She's in the man jobs because we don't care about gender. But also, I need a cool rider. I don't care what he looks like. As long as he's got a motorcycle, but he's not one of these people on a motorcycle. It's got to be a different one. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, well, you've muddled that.
I think they just got Pat Benatar's songwriter and was like, this song is smash. Let's put it in there. The other problem with both the T-Birds and the Pink Ladies in this film is that there is no sense of community between either group or inside of either group. In the first one, you got a sense of who each character was inside of that group. Like, especially with, look at me, I'm Sandra D. Like,
Rizzo.
Yeah, but like, even in that song, you saw Rizzo was kind of the bitch, and then you had...
was she a bitch or was she to the point? Because
I'm Team Rizzo all day long.
Hell yeah. Yes.
Okay. Team Rizzo all day long,
but she is still kind of, she's the rude one. She's the upfront one that's going to tell you how she is.
the movie starts when she puts on that wig. That's when the movie starts. And it ends when she says, there are worse things I could do. And I'm like, oh, well, that's the movie. Thanks, everybody. Everybody out of my apartment. We've seen it.
But inside of that, you could tell each member of the Peak Ladies group is very specific and knows their type. And even in the T-Birds, it's not as defined, I would argue, because I don't think they're as good actors. But they each had a very specific role to play. And in this one, it's just like...
I will say the first movie, the T-Birds, fell victim to that trope of we need like... Oh my God, Curly and them. Oh, the Three Stooges. Because it was still big Three Stooges energy. So somebody had to do that. And so you had Danny Kanicki being all sexy and like smoking hot and shit. And you had those three being like, we gotta be funny. Ha 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 ha, there's our asses. And nobody's laughing. But like, they wouldn't let that go because the Three Stooges were still like in all of the execs and writers' minds. I'm like, we gotta do it. Which is why you get like weird music cues in some of the Halloween sequels. And they're like, doop, 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 doop. And the sheriff walks in, you're like, come on now. Oh, there's a time and a place, and it's not here.
Those sound cues and that Halloween, I know exactly what you're talking about, and I hate that one. For
and
so they come out,
and I'm like, oh no.
They did Rachel so wrong in that movie.
Am I having a breakdown? Did I just make this up? No, it's real. And so I'm not mad at them because that's what they were given, but even though they were those like weirdly misplaced, the kids are not doing this anymore characters, I got a feel for some of them. I know who was in the Who. I know who was in the Frenchie. I know one of them wanted to do something. I forgot already. But like the first script gave people more to work with. And this one was like, we're making another Grease movie. Everybody get in the car. And they were like, okay.
This one felt more like a cash cow than the other one did.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. When they realized, because they were thinking, I think if I'm remembering right, they were thinking about doing a sequel to this before the movie Grease had come out. So they're just like, I don't know. And then Grease came out and it was a hit. So they're like, let's go. And yep, they were just trying to cash in on it. And that's hard to do when your script isn't finished. And you can't negotiate having any of like the two main characters come back.
Right. Can we talk about how terrible Michelle Pfeiffer is at dancing? I love her. This is no shade, but her dancing, especially in the group numbers.
She did as little as she could. Well, and I love that the dance moves are so clearly 80s. I mean, I think there's like some pony kicks and I don't know, just like the hands.
They were like, we will not be period pieces. No.
Y'all, I had to look because I saw on IMDb, this was nominated for 3 awards.
For what?
One of which is at the Stinkers Bad Movie Awards. And it was a nominated for Worst Picture. It did have 2 from the Young Artist Awards. Michelle Pfeiffer was nominated for Best Young Motion Picture Actress. And the film was nominated for Best Family Feature, Animated Musical, or Fantasy.
That's funny because Maxwell Caulfield feels a direct his career for 10 years, and that's why he didn't get work.
He blames this movie. He blames Grease 2 for ruining his career. I don't know. Whenever I hear his like or read his interviews, he just comes across as very pretentious and gross. So whatever, shut up.
He's Rex Manning, yes.
Yeah, he is like Rex Manning in real life.
True. The only person that could claim that a film ruined their career is The Shining. It ruined her whole life. Yeah. Shelley Duvall ruined her whole life. That film did.
Like when I read what Maxwell said about this movie, I was like, but Michelle Pfeiffer and Christopher McDonald were right there. Mm-hmm. Christopher McDonald had like 3 lines of the whole movie, and he's had a very full career. So I think as you, Mr. Sheffield, to borrow from Fran.
Yeah, they probably just don't want to work with you.
That's kind of what I was thinking. I was
He's been in everything. I didn't even recognize him as a young person, but I've seen him as an adult, old man.
It was like
one of his everything.
First 3 movies when I looked at his Wikipedia, because I'm just like, oh my God, because as a kid, I didn't know who he was because I've seen him be older. But I'm like, I know that face now that I'm an adult. And I was like, oh, it's Christopher McDonald. Oh no, I knew him. I know him.
Right.
Yep.
So you can't claim this movie ruined your career when it has 2 of the biggest actors out there in it.
Yep, absolutely. So yeah, pretty sure he's just kind of a piece of shit.
He's hot. He was hot though.
He was hot. So it's like it had to have been. He has to just be a terrible person because he was just ridiculously good looking, and you still can't get work being ridiculously good looking in the '80s.
Listen.
There were lots of Friday the 13th movies, okay?
Listen. You could have been doing a lot of things. We love a British actor over here. Like, I maybe try a new agent. I don't know. Like, but it was not this movie. Because, again, I know people love to hate this movie. I think that I have seen so much worse in my life that I am just like, this is delightful.
This is no men.
It's no this, mother if we're looking at Michelle Pfeiffer's resume.
Oh, she's in that? I haven't seen it.
I haven't either.
Oh, Trent. Mother is a movie, let me tell y'all. Jennifer Lawrence was sleeping with the director who decided to make her the lead of this movie, where he has an allegory, and you understand the allegory, but also the movie is just a movie. And that's what I'm going to say about that. Mm. So
I know what happens. It was spoiled for me, so.
Do you know all of what happens? Because a lot of things happen. And mm-hmm. I'm just like,
I know one thing that happens. So,
because Jennifer Lawrence had a movie come out recently. I don't remember which one it was anymore.
The one where she has to, she plays an Uber driver that has to sleep with this boy to lose.
That's the one. Yeah. I don't watch a lot of her movies, but like, because she had that coming out, she was like making the rounds. And one of the questions somebody asked, I forgot who the fucking was. I wish I remembered who asked her, but they're like, so why we have you in the hot seat? Did you understand the script?
Oh, I saw that.
And she started laughing, and when she like stopped crying, she was like, I was sleeping with the director, so I had the cliff notes. I understood some of it, but no.
Yes, I saw that interview.
That's hilarious.
I don't love all her movies, but she's very funny as a person.
I agree, yeah.
Sometimes she's funny, sometimes I'm just like, the people need to talk to you about what you should and shouldn't be saying.
Fair enough.
And that's why I don't follow her career as much as I think I would if she would just sometimes say a little less. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So. That's most people, though. Just like that dude from Green Arrow. Have y'all seen him?
He came out my God. What a dipshit.
He's already backtracking. Like, it's too late. The clips are out there.
I was like, you should have just stopped.
Yeah. He said all sorts of the wrong things. And I love that it's just like people are not letting go of it. And it's like, pretty sure Grant Gustin wouldn't say those things. You know, the actor who played The Flash and in the TV show.
If I had a dollar for every time a white person said something they shouldn't say, and instead of choosing silence, I would be a bajillionaire. I would be one of the people we're going to eat. Like, because literally every day, all day, it's just like, let me wade into this. Like, nobody needed you to say anything.
Exactly.
Nobody was looking for you to say anything.
Exactly. I think it was kind of like around the Me Too movement. Like, Matt Damon needed to have a fucking opinion on it for some reason, and people were asking him, and then he had to clarify. It's like, stop talking to him. Stop asking him questions.
Between describing diversity to the only Black person on Project Greenlight and between him a couple years ago, this is 2023, so a couple years ago, that means this decade, talking about how his daughter had to tell him not to use the F slur because it's a slur, and they used it all the time when he was a kid. And I was like, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I'm still working.
I remember that one too. I was like, wow, like, yes, people
kept
really.
You that to yourself.
Exactly.
You could have just not said that.
One of the reasons I've never seen a Henry Cavill movie, other than like he doesn't do anything I want to see, is because during the Me Too movement, he was like, it's getting scary. I like to pursue my women and you can't do that anymore. I'm like, what does that mean?
I saw that. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
God damn it. See, on one hand, it's like I kind of miss the days where we didn't ask celebrities about things like this, because then, you know, no one was, quote, like ruined for me. But at the same time, it's like I do like it because now I know you have a shitty take, or you're just a shitty person, or, you know, it's trash.
The ones who volunteered are the ones that really get me, because like the ones who are asked that, I'm just like, people knew you were going to like let them down. But the ones who are just like, I want to be a problem today.
By the way,
Gwen Stefani.
Girl.
Like, that interviewer was not ready. And the interviewer tried to change the subject. She's like, no, I mean it. I am Japanese now. And the interviewer's like, About your show. I said I'm Japanese now. I was like, please stop doing this to me.
The fact, when I learned all the details, I'm sorry, we're going down so many rabbit holes.
I know, it's
like,
so fun.
When I learned the details about all of those, when she had the, like, the girls that followed her around and she didn't pay them.
Yeah.
She didn't pay them. And then she, like, had to approve everything they did. I was like, ooh, girl, that's disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm really glad I watched a season of The Voice with her on it, because Ariana was on there. So I was like, I want to watch it for Ariana Grande and Kelly Clarkson. But her and Blake Shelton were disgusting the whole time. I was like, can you all stop?
Mm-hmm.
Straight and people. He's a racist. So when she married him, I was like, I remember the Harajuku girl phase and how I was like, because I was a No Doubt fan. And then she went solo and I was like, she's still the same person, right? But also, why is she using Asian women as props? I don't know how to feel. I'm a child.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody else seems to be saying anything. And then she was like, I'm going to marry this racist. I'm like, oh, well, then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then that whole thing, like, I don't follow Blake Shelton. I never watched The Voice. And now, because, yeah, he was married to Miranda
Lambert.
Yeah. And now she's, like, being a piece of shit, but
oh, is she now too? God,
well, because she did the thing where, like, there was a concert and she called out some fans that were like taking photos, and she's like, you know, can you stop taking selfies? We're here to listen to country music. And it's like, first of all, don't tell me how to enjoy the show that I just paid $1 billion for, and maybe don't call out your fans that paid $1 billion to come see you. Like, stop. Be like Dave Grohl and only stop the show if someone needs help or someone is being assaulted or something like that. Like, let people have fun. So either way, I was like, when Blake and Gwen Stefani, everyone's like rooting for them. They're like, yeah, they're so great. I'm like, y'all rooting for infidelity. He's got a wife and like a family and everything. And it's like, again, not a big, like, you know, not knowing a lot about their life, but I'm just like, these are human beings. And everyone's just like, woo!
People forget that all the time.
Yeah.
I will say, too, like, let your audience enjoy their shit until they throw something at you on stage. Then you're at, do the, who was it? Megan Thee Stallion, who fucking threw the mic at somebody. I was like,
Cardi B.
I was one of the two. I could,
I would never throw anything at Cardi B because I know she would beat my ass.
But yeah, like, people's corneas have been scratched. Like,
what is going on?
People just throwing shit on stage.
No, it's a new thing. People buy this expensive front row situation just to throw stuff. Like, it was a whole scandal because somebody threw something at Harry Styles on one of the last stops on his tour. And I'm just like, he's too fragile to throw anything in his face. Mm-hmm. Don't do that.
Mm-hmm. But also, I think Dua Lipa had something thrown at her.
Oh, that's
oh,
Adele,
yeah.
Adele had to be like, if y'all throw something at me, I could go off.
And you know she will. You know she will. And it'll be on her next album, 37. And
yes.
Oh, but, you know, who didn't get anything thrown at them were the girls of all seasons. I'm just trying to bring it back. But
I appreciate the segue. I think it's good.
Yeah, no tomatoes were thrown at them.
No.
They should have been.
Yeah, unfortunately. But
listen, I was like, we need less seasons.
isn't it the Apollo that had the cane that you like
kind of like that old vaudeville cane pulling him off. Yeah.
Ooh, it was bad.
I wanted to ask you guys about this. Okay. So, you know, it's a little bit of a gender swap from the original where the boy is trying to impress the girl and this and that. And, you know, but at the same time, there's this whole Pink Ladies code and the pledge and, you know, the Pink Ladies, they're T-Bird chicks, at least till grad. And so at the end, when everyone finds out Michael was the cool writer and everything, and Johnny has finally decided that, you know, he's given up on Stephanie and he's going to focus more on Paulette. They still have that moment where it's like patriarchy approved feminism, where he's like, I approve that you can be with this guy so much so that I'm going to make him a member of our group so he can, you know, you're following the code and everything, but it's like, it's graduation. Didn't need that.
It's like a boss coming to you on your last day of work and being like, here's all the stuff you've been asking for the entire time you were here. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm leaving in 2 hours. So that's great for your next person.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Yep. Like I will say I liked the idea, like you said, the idea of the gender swap and having the man be the one that has to appeal to the woman. But yeah, it totally twisted it into being about the man having to, which is kind of queer, so oh hell, here's a queer reading of this film. The man having to appeal to other men so that he can be with the woman. Like, that feels, I mean, very on brand for the 50s, but like, still very toxic.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Like, that's not her dad. You're not asking for a hand in marriage. Like, this is some dude that's flunking school with her. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, well, I need him to like me so she'll like me, but I also need her to like me so he can't like me too much. And mm-hmm. I'm just like, you know what, Michael? Why don't you just be like, I'm the cool writer. Are we doing this or no? But also, Michael. He asks her out and she's like, no. And he keeps asking her out and she's like, no. And I'm like, good sir. If she keeps saying no, it's probably not meant to be. But that's that trope we see in a lot of older movies and still today mm-hmm. and musicals, where it's just like, if you're persistent, the girl will buckle eventually. And it's like, no. Sometimes a no is a no.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
No but- means no.
That's right, Michael. But I did like Paulette is one of my favorite characters in this movie. And again, I think Lorna Luft just got cheated for not having her own solo or even having a larger singing roles in the different musical numbers. But I love Paulette because she knows what she wants, and she's decided that she wants Johnny, and Johnny's still kind of like distracted and not really focused, but he's going to use Paulette. And eventually, and a couple of times, Paulette just straight up tells him, like, you need to fucking decide what you want to do, because I don't like getting jerked around and strung along and this and that. And then even at the talent show, she's like, Mr. Push everyone around Johnny Nogarelli, like, you need to fucking choose. So it's like, I'm glad that she was assertive and stood up for herself, but it's like, why are you still settling for this wishy-washy little boy? He yes. can do cool cigarette tricks, but like, eh.
Right? I'm just like, girl, you need to set a boundary and stick to it. Because yeah. again, she's like, you need to do it. I'll see you tomorrow night. I'm like, well, if there's no consequences. Like,
speaking of cigarettes, the moment in the luau, when they're Stephanie and whoever that other dude was were on that like float in the middle of the pool, he's smoking and drops his cigarette, and she's like, what are you doing? Gonna tip it? He's like, I'm burning myself. I was like, that I hope that was like not scripted. Like,
it wasn't.
It
was not scripted. So they said that during that scene, because it was super cold. And so they're just kind of sitting on that raft for like hours on end. And they were just having fun kind of going back and forth and just enjoying the time and everything. And so a lot of that back and forth, him dropping the cigarette, that was not intentional. So Stephanie talking shit like, what are you doing? You're going to burn it. I'm burning myself. All apparently unscripted. And it sounded like there was a lot of kind of ad-libbing and improv, and the director was very supportive of that. So, you know, like during the musical number of Trent's Favorite Reproduction, and at the end, Christopher McDonald going around as like the little sperm, and like, and then the girls are doing like putting their arms in circles, and so he's kind of like swimming through them. He said that wasn't scripted. He just did that, and after more and more takes, more girls were doing that, and they just were having fun with it. And
that like, explains so much.
It's like, what drugs were going around? Seriously, it's a lot of cocaine. Like,
what is this choreography? Because the choreography is all over the place. The choreography I will not forgive, because everything else I'm fine to make amends with. I'm fine to make peace and start healing. But the choreography, and I'm no dancer, I'm no musical girl, but I'm just like, nobody seems to know what we're doing. And so we're just like, gonna sway again. And I'm like, okay, we swayed the whole movie, 2 hours.
It's like the same three moves over and over. Yes.
I also did, that's why I did like schools, back to school, because that choreo was pretty, that was pretty cute choreo, that one number.
Mm-hmm. It's like the person who was teaching it, like did that number and was like, bye.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But like then, so the luau number, the group luau number, Would Michelle Pfeiffer still think, aside from saying her actual name, when Stephanie thinks that Michael's actually dead and she comes out and she's like, just like burnt. I was like, girl. That was so much.
I love learning that this was being written on the fly, because it feels like, I just watched both of these back to back. It feels like the first one is a stage production of a high school musical, and this is what's going on in the green room. Mm-hmm. And so I love that this is just like people fucking improvising and just being like, yes. Yeah,
this
I
is don't the, know. You know what would be funny? What if we had a song that's only about reproduction? It doesn't advance the plot line. It doesn't help you understand any characters. It's literally just about reproduction.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the songs didn't advance the plot line or the character, and that's my villain origin story. Because the first one, at least we were moving things along. And I'm like, okay. This one was just like, we need another group number. How about some bowling stuff? Yeah, bowling.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to score tonight. And
I was like, we get it. You all want to get laid. We've gotten that from the first 7 songs. Let me go home.
Oh, my God. But yeah, that last song, okay, because these songs have like maybe a line in them that just kill me every fucking time. So in the last one, it's when the horny guy, Lewis, asks Sharon, will I ever score? And she's like, there's nothing wrong with just liking each other. Like, you know what? Good for you, Sharon, for standing your ground and keeping your V card and not letting Lewis trick you, gaslight you into like being patriotic and sex for sexy time, yeah, and stuff.
That whole scene.
But that shit was nuts.
That whole scene. Why were they in a bomb shelter?
I think just a private place. And I think I'm guessing, because I don't think it's stated, but I think that's Michael's bomb shelter, because Lewis was very much like, this place is neat. And
I mean, I get it. It's the 50s. Bay of the Pigs, I think, was there. Like, okay, sure. Okay. But like, why would she be like, okay, yeah, let me go in this bomb shelter.
My other thing, there's so many things about that scene, but the thing I'm going to like focus on, because I'm going to focus. I don't feel like he's going to do anything impressive enough that warrants an audience. And so the fact that he has his friends on the side of the door counting the seconds if something should happen, I was like, good sir, choices are being made here.
Why do you need to look out? Like, just, yeah. Well, like, when I had sex in high school, I didn't have a lookout. I just, like,
listen,
had sex.
Yeah.
I know they had the sound effects. I know they had the sound effects, but like, what would have happened had he actually talked her into believing he was going away and they gotta like do it right now? I mean, his friends would have just been there for the 15 seconds and it would have been awkward. Mm-hmm. Like, because it would have been like, right. Good sir.
Mm-hmm. I want someone to tell me I'm going to war, so let's fuck. And I'd be like, well, A, is he hot? That's the first question. B, B,
he's about to go to war if he is.
What? But if he's a cool writer, it doesn't matter that you haven't seen his face.
Right. A or B, I don't care that you're going to war. If you're hot, I'll have sex with you. But like, you don't have to tell me this backstory to like get me in the band. Like,
Tristan's are gonna be wild down. It's gonna be like, do you think I'm hot?
I guess like if I've already decided that I'm going to have sex with you and you tell me, hey, this is my last time before I go overseas to like war. Okay, then I'm gonna pull out all the stops, maybe. Like I'm gonna go like A+ game. You know, you're not gonna get I'm not going to phone it in, but like.
No, I will say that the I'm going to war tomorrow trope is a thing that was used a lot in movies that were supposed to be set in the 50s, because I've seen it in so many things. I think like the Book of Love or some other comedies I grew up watching that are set in the 50s. And so I was like, well, you know, I'm going to war tomorrow. And I'm like, what were the girls into in the 50s? We're like, well, if you're going to war, I guess I'm going to do this. Like, I just. I have questions.
Yeah.
For everybody's parents and grandparents.
What? Yeah. It's like, and I wish I could say that this movie is like a satire or something, because I feel like that would make a little bit more sense for some of these things and some of the questions, but it's not. And I think that's part of the reason why I love this. I mean, it was like a train wreck from the second I couldn't stop watching it, and I have been in love with it ever since. And then rewatching it for this recording, I was like, like, I know I love this movie, but fuck, I forgot how much I loved it. So I went right away on Etsy. I was like, I need Grease 2 merch. Yes. I don't have any. How is this possible?
Jen, have you watched? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Trish.
She feels like that friend you're always rooting for, but she's very messy. Oh, yeah. And you're like, I don't know if she's going to make it, but I'm rooting for her.
To me, she is me in the friend group. She's the drunk bitch who's like, God, he's drunk again. Here we go. See what happens.
We didn't have to name any names, Trent, but like,
I made myself, okay? I made myself.
You're like, I see myself in this picture.
This is 1.5 star I gave on Letterboxd. But so my question is, Jen, have you watched The Pink Ladies, the new TV series?
I did not, and I was gonna watch it, and then it got canceled, and then I don't know if it ended up got pulled from, what was it, Paramount?
I think it was Paramount, and if so, I didn't see it when I put in Grease. I saw the live, and I saw Grease 2. Mm. But so when the strike started, that was one of the ways Paramount was not punishing, quotation marks, not punishing people by being like, when the show is wrapped, we're going to pull it from the streamer, and so nobody's getting residuals.
Sucks, because I didn't know it got pulled, because I was going to check it out at some point, but like, not any longer.
Let me double check, because like,
just pay people.
And they're
people.
Also selling the DVDs. Just I'm like, how are you going to pull it from your streamer and sell the DVDs? Like, right.
Right.
And I did see because another like account that I follow, Dustin Rewatches podcast, but he was watching Pink Ladies, and he posted that there was like a quick little Grease 2 reference. I can't remember what it was, but once I saw that, I was like, they referenced Grease 2. I was like, all right, I'll take it out. I gotta watch it.
I've heard good things. Like I have a coworker friend that was watching it, and she said it's really cool and like made some interesting comments on like how the first film commented on women and like all that kind of stuff. And there was diversity in the cast, so that was cool. But like, that sucks that they fucking, A, it was canceled, and B, it was pulled.
Yeah, they did it on purpose, because they never pull anything before, like, literally, they were like, the last episode airs on this date, and it's going away from the streamer on this date. And I was like, that never happens. That never happens. You know what you're doing. You're trying to make sure people don't get paid. Mm-hmm. Because, like, while they were pulling it, they were like, in our email, because we get emails from all the places now, and it's like, if you want to purchase these DVDs, they're going on sale here, please announce it to your followers. I'm like, no. Also, you can like rent them from Apple. I think they're like $2 an episode. So like, if it's really good, I might do that later down. I don't know. Because again, I'm not a musical girl, but I was curious. Mm-hmm. So I was going to watch it eventually. But also, this was my first time watching either movie after Olivia Newton-John's death. And also after, oh my God, I forgot Kaneki's real name. Let me go.
Something Conway.
Yes, Jeff Conway, I believe.
Jeff. I almost said Tom, but that's not correct.
I think it was a Jeff. Jeff Conaway. Because he passed away a few years ago, and Olivia we lost last year. And so it was so weird watching that without at least one of them. And so it felt so weird, because now it's just Sacha Channing and John Travolta, who I have feels about, because now that I'm an adult, I know he's a Scientologist. Again, I want to go back to knowing less about the celebrities.
Exactly.
I'm looking at this cast for Rise of the Pink Ladies, and it's super, like, cool. There's tons of POC. There's a non-binary person. There is, like, yes. Damn it. Fuck. I hate that, but here we are.
Maybe when the strike is over, Paramount will try and save some face and put it back up. But, like, a few shows have gotten pulled because a few places have done this. Disney. I don't remember what show it was Disney had, but it was created by somebody who I want to say was a person of color. And they were really excited to see it go up, but they couldn't advertise it too much because the strike had started.
Yeah.
And so Disney was like, we're just going to pull it. And that person's like, I waited all these years to get my work out there. And now like my friends could see it. And like, you're just going to like pull it because you want to be
so
petty.
Shitty. That's so fucking shitty. I don't know if it's the same show, but because I think it was Disney that had Willow kind of picking up from the.
Mm-hmm. So
I don't know if that show ended up getting removed, but I feel like there's been more talks of pulling shows from their streamers. And it's like they're the original shows of that company. It's like just.
Yeah.
It's so fucking stupid.
And it's so frustrating too, because it's so easy to just pay people what they deserve to be paid. Like, for example, the strike folks, I can't remember the acronyms for the
SAG or WGA.
That one. They've okay. I've been drinking, y'all. they've okayed A24 films to start filming because A24 said, "What do you want?" Yes, done.
Because A24 is already paying people. Like, the places that were paying people are not hurt by this.
A24 does not make the money Paramount or Disney or any of these people make.
No, it's the greedy execs and the people who run the streamers, which is why Insecure moved from HBO, where it was made and has been forever, to Netflix.
That's why. I was like, what the fuck is going on? Why is an HBO series on Netflix? Like, don't get me wrong. I was like, oh, now I can watch it here too. But I was like, what? Like, nothing makes, like, this is a fucking bizarro ass timeline and I don't like it.
It just doesn't make sense. And I hate the people online that are like, oh, it's just rich actors wanting more money. And I'm like, no, it's rich actors going to the picket line for people that don't make money. Mm-hmm. For the bit part players, the people on small network television that's not like Meryl Streep. Or like, Meryl Streep don't need no money. She fine.
No, some big actors are going to the picket lines. But yeah, while I'm always over here hating on Scientologists, Tom Cruise and his worthless ass was like, can I get a waiver to advertise a new Mission Impossible nobody wants to see? And they were like, no, but you can support us and pick it. And he's like, I'll support you in other ways, but I think I'm too big to be there because it'll be a distraction. And there are so many people who are more talented and cooler and more popular than Tom Cruise out there every day sweating and being dehydrated. And so, like, I've never liked him. And so I just left straight that factoid so other people can know I was right. I've been right my whole life.
Another reason I'm glad Barbie and Oppenheimer blew Mission Impossible out of the water. So, bye.
I don't want to see either of those movies, but I'm happy they're beating him because that's all that matters. That's the game. It's keeping Tom Cruise away from the top two. What?
I've always Barbie's felt my like new
personality, but here we are.
I've always felt like I would probably watch more Tom Cruise movies if he wasn't actually in them. Like, I might have actually liked Mission Impossible or whatever other action-y things that he's done, but I don't like him, so no thanks.
I think he's the reason as a kid I did not like Interview with a Vampire, because I don't remember why I didn't like it as a kid, but he was there, and so I'm blaming him. Mm. I've seen that, Jerry Maguire, and Minority Report, and I've seen no other Tom Cruise movies, I found out when I looked at his Wikipedia the other day.
Same. There may be a couple in there that I've seen, but I can't think of any more. I will say, too, when I learned that Katie Holmes had to, like, leave in the dead of night with her child to protect them, I was like,
that's Scientology.
My dude. My dude.
Look at that's Nicole Kidman. Remember Nicole Kidman when she escaped her divorce hearing and actually, like, she was freed?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, he's a douche because he went on Oprah's show and jumped up and down on her couch in his shoes. And I remember that from my childhood. I've never liked this man.
Like, what if he had stepped in poop? Like, just nasty and inconsiderate. Yeah,
I've somebody who steps in poop regularly. Like,
all Scientologists step in poop.
All Scientologists.
That's why I'm like, I hate when I find out people are like, God damn it.
Oh, I know. Yep.
Like, what's her name? From
Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Moss.
Talk about it. Yes. Yeah. I will say, in her slight defense, it's a problem. But, like, she doesn't talk about it. Like, she's not like Tom Cruise going out like, Scientology!
Mm-hmm. But it's in the way she doesn't talk about important issues. Like, she tried to say The Handmaid's Tale was a human story and not a feminist story. And I'm like, that's your cult speaking.
Don't get me started. Me and Leah Remini have spent many hours talking.
Listen. Leah's like, I just gave tears of those down.
I love her.
I do too. Love her. And her relationship with Michelle Visage, it's hysterical.
They were getting their bits checked out together the other day on Instagram. And they were like, grab a buddy so that way you can do it together and then go out to lunch and go shopping. And I was like, and Michelle was in the room with her, just like on the side, being like, yeah, I'm here for Leah. And Leah's going to be here for me, but I'm not going to record mine. And Leah's like, I have nothing else to not share. And the
another
doctor
rabbit hole
like,
got down.
The doctor's got like the gloves on, like between it. He's like, hey! And I'm like, what have I just stumbled into?
I have not seen that. That's a terrible.
Oh my God, Instagram let's put up a different bodies picture with a lighter on her tongue. And I was like,
I love it so much. All right. All right. Well, let's see where we're at here.
Little rabbit hole we've gone down.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead. Why don't we hit up the stray bubbles? So last chance to bring up any notes, fun facts, questions. You guys got anything else?
By only, I think we talked about it, but like the fact that he just magically learned to ride a motorcycle, it was like, and then he rode off the edge and they were like, oh, he's fine. He's so good at it. He's probably great. He's just like, leave it like this magnificent motorcycle rider now. Like, what? Mm-hmm. How did this happen?
He's the best motorcycle rider in town. So apparently there was supposed to be a musical number, or at least a scene where Frenchie is teaching Michael how to be a cool rider and kind of instructing him on some of the cool things he needs to do to impress Stephanie. But, you know, the script wasn't done, so it never happened.
I wondered because she finds him falling off his bike. She's like, oh, Michael. And then we go to some other scene. I'm like, what happened with that? What?
Mm-hmm. Yep, well, then
I like that Sheree brought up Rocky Horror earlier, because I was totally getting Rocky Horror vibes in that song where she's singing about him and he's like walking down this mountain motorcycles or whatever. I was like, this is, what's that song? The meatloaf sings in Rocky Horror.
Oh, yeah. Hot Patootie.
This is the Hot Patootie moment. Hot Patootie, bless your soul.
When I found out meatloaf was also garbage, it hurt me because he was in everything as a kid.
He's garbage? God damn it.
Yes.
So
he was making the con round that people were in the pandemic before he died. And he was just being very gross to some women that my friend was, because my friend was not into meatloaf because he'd heard stories already. But his friend is a meatloaf fan because, again, he was in everything when we were kids. Like, he was the 80s, and that 80s shit carried over into the 90s.
Right.
And so she's like, I'm going to get a picture of meatloaf. And like, he was not about masks. He's like, take your mask off. Show me your pretty face. You're so pretty. See, you shouldn't wear a mask. You should smile more. And then he died. And I'll just leave that out there.
You tell the best stories.
And then he died.
And then he died.
As Sheree said earlier, she is really into death.
Yes. Way to bring it back around. I love it.
Boom. Boom. We love a segue. My
stray bubble is aside from wishing we had more Frenchie, I was happy to see the principal and the principal's assistant back for this one, because mm-hmm. it did give us that grounding. And that assistant was working. She was still going to the lab. Nothing had changed for her.
Loved the, like, what was the song she was playing on the xylophone?
The xylophone, yeah.
Yeah, the something. Ba 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 la 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 la.
Oh, good. She's
my constant favorite. Like, in the first one and the second one, I'm probably her. If we were to like remount this and I had to be on stage, I'd be like, leave me on the phone.
And I'll be the principal, be like, stop it. And yeah. I'll come on a flask.
I love that they got those. Let's see. Eve Arden, Duty Goodman, and Sid Caesar all came back for a total of 3 minutes for the three of them. And it was just nice to see them. And I was just like, aw, they got like a couple of others back.
Right. It was definitely like some drive-by energy, though. It's like, we were here, bye.
Yep.
And like, you didn't even got the car, girl. You stuck your hand out and waved at us like your Beyonce.
It's like they just happened to be like near the set that day or something, or in the area. And they're like, oh, hey, why don't you come over here
we'll stop by.
It's like Melissa McCarthy and Gilmore Girls: A Year in the Life, where they made us wait until the end, and it was like, oh yeah, no, she's on a mountain, and it's a very sketchy story we've made up. And then she's like, I would not make your cake, Lorelai, and then you never see her again. And I'm like,
don't get me started on that.
A Year in the Life is a villain origin story. I have many villain origin stories, but that is definitely one.
That one, I admit, yeah. But I admit, I got sucked into the just kind of the nostalgia and the woohoo, everyone's back. But I've only rewatched it once, and that was for the podcast.
I haven't rewatched it. I remember the first one being good enough, and after that they lost me. But also the middle two were written by Daniel. Okay, so Amy Sherman-Palladino, for all of her faults, can usually put together an episode. Mm-hmm. Daniel is her husband and they are a team. And so he has to write stuff sometimes. And we always can tell. We can always tell. Even in the original run, I was like, Daniel wrote this one. And then I'd rewind, I'm like, Daniel did write this one. Yeah, he did. Because you got a man messing around with the Gilmore Girls. It's not called the Gilmore People. It's called the Gilmore Girls. Mm-hmm. You need people to understand how women function to not be saying shady shit like that. And I'm just like, Daniel, come on now.
Right.
Also, his pacing. Because his episodes in the middle are the longest of the Year in the Life saga. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, you don't need a 9-minute dance number. We get it. You like this actor. Let me go home.
Right, I always block that part out.
Because of that, I can't look at Sutton Foster ever again. Because I tried to do bun heads after, and like I'm still bitter. And so I had to stop.
Sutton Foster is so great.
No, she danced for 9 minutes for no reason other than Daniel doesn't know how to edit himself. Like we were doing Gilmore things, all of a sudden it's a Sutton Foster show, and I was like, stop, stop. Where's Miss Patty?
I haven't finished all the original. I've seen some of it, but I haven't watched.
It's in a year in a life. It's after they like go away and come back like all those years later.
But she's not one of the returners.
She was not in the original. She's just in a year in a life. They snuck her in because they work with her in Bunheads and they like her. And I love that they like people, but also 9 minutes of you shoving your friend dancing at me for whomst. I showed up to see my girls and then like pay Richard some respect. And I have this new person just dancing, dancing for 9 minutes. And I'm just like, girl, get it. You got some breath control.
I always love rewatching Gilmore Girls because every time I rewatch it, I hate Lorelai and Rory more and more, and I feel more connected to Emily and Miss. I've always said my mom was a combination of Mrs. Kim and Emily Gilmore, of tiny, loud, scary Asian woman, but also like with the backhanded compliments and just kind of that whole vibe of Emily Gilmore.
I totally see. Mommy. Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
That was my mommy.
Every time I watch it, I hate Rory so much more.
So much more.
She was always a brat, but we didn't clock it at first. And like, she gets a lot of it from her mother, but her mother's trying to be cool about it because she's getting older. And she's like, no. We have to remember people are people, but also I'm gonna say some bitchy things to her. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, she didn't even do anything to you. She was trying to like help you and your bad back. Like, why are you lashing at Suki?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I also, every time we watch it, I also hate Luke more.
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no rewatch here. I'm just like first time watching, and I haven't seen it all, but I agree. He is my dude.
The strayest of bubbles, because it's about Luke and an actor who plays Luke. So first off, Luke was supposed to originally be a woman, but then they decided they wanted a love interest, and you can't have queer people on the WB in the 98. And I'm like, are you not watching your other shows? Because you got them on your other shows. secondly, that actor, I think it's Scott Patterson, but I was getting mixed up with the murderer, Scott Peterson. One is Patterson and one is Peterson.
With that murderer, you know.
One is an actor, one did his wife that way. But the actor, he decided to have a podcast like everybody else. No shade. I've had six. And on his podcast, he decided he wanted to talk about the time he felt objectified on the Gilmore Girls set.
Oh,
and
I heard about that.
Apparently, the scene where they talk about his butt because he's always in those jeans and the coat, so he can't even see his butt.
I did read about that.
Yeah, he felt like a piece of meat, and he hated it, and the experience, he felt so objectified. It's like, shut the fuck up. Like, you know what? You were supposed to be there, first off. Also, secondly, they have Lorelai running around in, like, 2-inch scarves in the dead of winter so she can see her cleavage, which she doesn't really have. And you're just like, they talked about my butt, and I just felt so dirty.
Mm-hmm. Also, that was the, like, I have seen that episode, I'm pretty sure. That was the fucking point. Like, like, men, this is what it feels like. Like, hello, all this criticism about Barbie. And I'm like,
right,
men, whatever.
Listen, now, if he wants to feel objectified, he should do the Margot Robbie Suicide Squad. I've seen the trailer where the camera's in her ass, the whole trailer. And that's why I never watched the movie, because I don't need to see her butt. I'm sure it's a very lovely butt. She's a lovely person, but I've never seen any of her movies.
There's a very good reason Margot Robbie said, I want to do Barbie and do it this film that is blowing up at the box office. So. Good for her and good for Greta Gerwig.
Absolutely. I like Margot Robbie.
People love Greta.
Yes. All right.
And that's not true. I did see a Margot Robbie movie. It was Bombshell. I forgot. I always forget I saw that one, but nothing else from her.
I've only ever really seen her, like, I've seen Suicide Squad and I don't care for it, but I enjoyed her Birds of Prey, like kind of the solo Harley Quinn movie. It's a lot of fun. And when you look at it as, think of it as like, this is Harley's chance to tell a story. So it's more from her perspective. So you keep that in mind when you watch it. And I think you'll have a good time. And then James Gunn's The Suicide Squad is better. And her character, Harley Quinn, is even like, she's just not in all that skimpy ass shit. She's still Harley Quinn. And Margot Robbie does a great job with that character. But
she's a great actress. Like, mm-hmm.
I don't know. I thought I saw her movies because she's in everything. And so I assumed I saw some of her stuff. But I went down her Wikipedia when Barbie was coming out because, like, she was being thrown in my face. And I was like, what have I actually seen her in? Nothing but Bombshell.
Yeah.
But I will the marketing of her movies is so invasive. I feel like I've seen her movies. Right. Like,
I'm literally obsessed with Barbie. So, like,
I can see that for you. Yeah. Like,
My energy is enough.
No. Yeah, I knew it wasn't for me, but I'm happy that, like, a lot of actors I love are getting checks, and a lot of my friends who love Barbie seem to be living their best lives. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I'm a Greta girl. I've not seen her movies, but they don't look like things that I would be into. And apparently me and Margot have not agreed on anything ever.
me and Greta are like this. Yeah. So.
No, you know how I am. I get a whiff of white feminism. I'm just like, I'm not going to hit play on this.
I get it. Fair. I don't know that she subscribes to that subtitle, but she is white and she is a feminist. So, like, you know.
I looked at a couple of her, like Lady Bird. Like, that looks all white casty for me.
I haven't seen any of her movies. I think when I looked her up, I was like,
all white casty, but people are like, and it's such a great role for a woman. But I'm like, but where are the people of color? Where are the women of color?
Barbie is absolutely not all white casty. So
it's the first time. And I'm hoping it helps her do better in the future.
Yeah. I will say it's just been three. So it's not like a Christopher Nolan or like a lot of these.
But two's company and the company you keep. That's what I'm looking at.
And I will say in Little Women, sorry for going down Greta Gerwig rabbit hole.
That's fine.
That was a big all white cast looking.
Well, there is POC. They're not like named character. Well, they're not like main characters, but they do have lines.
That'll
just have lines. And I was surprised because every other version of Little Women I've seen has no POC. Like, none.
No, like, I'm coming off of a kick of a bunch of BBC dramas where they are like, you know what, we should be less racist and just like include some black and brown people in our lead characters that are traditionally white. And like Greta's like, not me. And so we're not getting along right now. And again, people are on journeys. Maybe like I'll wake up tomorrow and she'll be like, I'm producing this black-led Wakanda thing and it's fire. And I'm like, yes, I've been waiting. Let's go. But until then, I'm going to just sit here and say less because it, again, hints of white feminism, when there's smoke, there's fire. So I'm just not dying to see your stuff yet.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Totally fair. I think that I hope that this is the first of many because like Issa Rae is in Barbie.
So many people I love are getting paid and I hope they have real scenes.
Mm-hmm. America Ferrera has a fun. If you don't watch the movie, read her monologue. Read her monologue about being a woman. America Ferrera. It is. And it brought me to tears. Like,
yeah, I've heard it was amazing.
I've seen people sharing pieces. Mm-hmm. I've seen people sharing pieces, and I'm gonna keep skipping all of it. But thank you.
Fair points. All right.
All right. Well, my only stray bubble. Which I didn't know until getting ready for this recording today, but the twins in the movie. Real names are Liz and Jean Segal. They are Katie Segal's or Segal's. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. They're her younger sisters.
And are you serious?
I didn't know that either. And after I read that and I'm watching their scenes, I was like, oh, I see it. I see some resemblance there. So after all these years, I can still learn something new about this movie. Like during the bowling sequence and they're all dancing in the lanes. There's a nun and an old guy on a far lane dancing. And I had never noticed that until today. And I couldn't stop watching it. And I couldn't stop laughing.
I was like, I don't know what's happening. And I kept waiting for it to like become something, but it never did. And I was like, okay.
It felt like an SNL skit when they pulled up and I was like, so what?
This really feels this really feels like the kids behind the stage are just having fun because they have time in the green room. But it's like, let's get some costumes and the props. Ha ha! I'm gonna write a song. I'm not above it. I was a green room girl because I was never going out on stage. And so you have downtime. Why not fuck around and see what happens? But like the whole movie shouldn't feel that way.
Yeah, that's wild though. I didn't know they were. Because on the podcast, like in the summer, we just covered Torn Hearts with Katie Sagal. And so like that's wild.
If you've not seen Torn Hearts, I think you might actually enjoy it.
You would like it. Go watch it. It's on Hulu?
It was on Paramount, I think.
Paramount, that's what it was.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
It's not what I expected because like I was like country music, I don't know. But like it's a thriller about country music and she gets to play a character that like she was born to play.
Yeah. I have issues with it, but like it's a fun time.
Okay. And like I'm not gonna lie, I don't like country music, but that song they were singing together got me. I was like, can I buy this?
I'm sure you can.
She's a beautiful singing voice. It made me Google her and I found out I think that she used to be a backup singer, but for like big acts. Like I'm saying Tina Turner, but it might have been somebody else and some other people. And like she has a resume for backup singing. And I'm like, no wonder she sounds so good. Cause I'm like, that's her real voice. What is happening? Oh,
I always forget that she can like sing. Mm. So that's awesome.
She's from the era where you couldn't just be an actor. You had to be an actor / singer or / dancer or a triple threat. Mm-hmm. And she chose singing. And yes. She tried to sell me a country song. In front of my face.
Almost had you. All right. Well, we'll go ahead and move on to the Midwest goodbye. So this is where we'll spend another 40 minutes trying to wrap everything up and close out this show. So the first stop of the Midwest goodbye is the 6 Degrees of Nicolas Cage, Grease 2. Did you guys get one done?
I have one. I want to go first.
I'll take one of mine. So I have two.
Okay.
I wanted mine because it's like, I think I'll take it.
I think you have one of mine.
I'm going with my girl, Michelle Pfeiffer, to Stardust with Robert De Niro. And then Robert De Niro to, what's that movie called? Killing Season, which I have not seen, with Nicolas Cage.
Very good.
I was so certain you were going to take one of mine because one of mine involved Cher and I just knew it was going to be you, Trent. I just knew it was
going to
be you.
Did you go to Moon?
Yeah, I did. Okay. Yeah, I did.
All right. Take it away.
I almost went there.
Go with that one because I'm already part of it. So I went with Michelle Pfeiffer to The Witches of Eastwick.
Yes, I love that so much.
And that's where I met up with Cher to go to Moonstruck and found Nicki Cage waiting for me.
That is awesome.
Snap out of it.
I love it. Michelle Pfeiffer was an easy one, and Didi Khan is also easy because you can loop that back to Grease and then Con Air. But with Michelle Pfeiffer, you can take Michelle Pfeiffer and go to Hairspray with John Travolta and then end up at Con Air. Mm-hmm. But for my girl Paulette, Lorna Luft, who got cheated, since she is the half-sister of Liza Minnelli, who is in a movie called Parallel Lives with Paul Sorvino, who is in The Family Man with Nicolas Cage.
There you go.
I thought you were going to go my other one because went with Michelle to Hairspray for John Travolta. And then I went with John Travolta to Face Off with Nicki Cage because they swapped Face Off.
Oh, Face Off. I meant Face Off. I keep saying Con Air. I keep fucking that up. I did that the last time. Shit. Thank you for correcting me.
Because when the people are in Con Air, I was going with you. Because I was going to try and do Steve Buscemi somewhere in the middle. Yeah. I'm like, no, stop. Let me just find the directest route.
Isn't Angelina Jolie in Face Off? Who's the girl in that?
No, it's Eva Mendes, I think, is in.
Oh, Eva Mendes. Right.
That would open us up to all kind of Vin Diesel parallel lives. Like, yeah. We did the
with
direct
route. Pfeiffer, you could get there pretty multiple ways.
Mm-hmm. Like, I was going to do Maxwell Caulfield because I was like, Empire Records definitely gets us Renee Zellweger, Liv Tyler. Liv Tyler is a hot spot for everybody. You can get to anybody from her. She is a connecting flight. and Anthony LaPaglia. Aaliyah and Debbie Mazar. I was like, there's so many people in Empire Records might go that route. But I was like, no, because we just did that. And I don't remember what I said. I don't want to reuse the same path.
good idea. Yeah. That's fun. That's fun. Yeah. I like that.
I'm not going to lie. When I first looked at it, I was like, oh my God, this is Nicolas Cage. I was like, wait, it's Michelle Pfeiffer, nothing else. Just
right. Well, that's the other thing. Like, that's going, bringing it back to earlier. Talk about Maxwell Caulfield. Like, the fact that we are so easily connecting to Nicolas Cage, who is a prolific actor, with Michelle Pfeiffer, Lorna Luft.
Like, could have done it with Chris McDonald, too. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
We could have done it with Chris McDonald.
Multiple people in this film. It's like, this film was not the reason you didn't work.
All right. So my computer just decided it wanted to shut down and restart. So whatever the hell I was just saying, it doesn't matter. We did our 60 minutes.
Oh, I want to know. Oh my God.
It looks serious because you were like,
okay.
We were talking about how Max Caulfield, this couldn't have been like the reason his career was bad, because we were so easily did the 6 degrees in like multiple ways.
So, okay. So Christopher McDonald, right? Played Goose. Mm-hmm. He was in Happy Gilmore with Adam Sandler. And of course, with Adam Sandler is always Steve Buscemi. And then Con Air.
Yes.
All right. Yes. Jesus Christ. All right. So we'll go ahead. And before my computer decides it wants to shut down again, what's been streaming in y'all's bubble? What have you all been watching?
So in July, I had some weeknights free because I didn't know what my life was going to be. And so I didn't get overbooked, which is very rare for me. So I took Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday night to watch shows I've been meaning to watch. Tuesdays, I'm working on season 2 of Fringe. Joshua Jackson can always get it, even today. Wednesdays, I'm doing Ash versus the Evil Dead. I'm having fun with it. It's definitely Evil Dead. So if you're not an Evil Dead person, you're going to be like, no. But I think it's a funny little bloody situation. And so I'm not mad at it. And I'm in season 2 now. And Thursdays, I polished off both seasons of Crystal Lake. No, that's not right.
No, that's,
is it
that's
Crystal
not
Lake?
Yet.
No.
Ride Fuller Friday series?
No, it's the Stephen King stuff. Oh, Castle Rock. That's what it is. Castle Rock.
Yeah. I was like, if I miss Crystal Lake, I'm going to be pissed.
No. Girl, we would be covering it already. We would be there.
Sheree would have texted me or something.
Hi, back. We're doing lives again, Trent. get your light back. Wear the ring lights.
Awesome. Awesome. I had started Ash versus Evil Dead a long time ago. I should probably get back to that because I like Evil Dead.
I'm liking it more than some of the movies.
Oh,
you haven't seen a new one?
I haven't. I need to.
It's on Max.
I know. I just haven't gotten to it. Should I rewatch the remake before I go into it? Or does that matter?
No.
Okay.
You don't have to, but
I loved the remake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all on Max right now because I was like, we should try and like get to those two, but we have to do the third one first. And so we're not going to be getting those two this year.
And Trent, what have you been streaming in your bubble?
So I have been watching a HBO docuseries, a true crime docuseries. It's called Last Call, when a serial killer stalked queer New York. It is wild because I had heard bits and pieces of this story, but I never like dived too far into it. In New York, in the late 80s, early 90s, gay men, both closeted and not, were being murdered and like dismembered, and their body parts would be found across the state. And the police, of course, were shitty and were like, well, even in the first episode, the police officer they're interviewing for the podcast is like, I don't understand why you keep asking me about the queerness. Why does that matter? And it's like, it's the only thing that connects all the victims. Anyway, I haven't finished it yet, but I really enjoy it. It's really good.
Awesome. I've just been watching, I've watched all 3 Hell House LLCs.
I need to do that. I have heard, I've never seen them. And I've heard from multiple people. Sheree is one and a bunch of people, but like, yes.
I watched the first two because our friends Jazz and Jamie from other horror podcasts were like, girl. I need to see the third one before the fourth one comes out because I will not just be here missing things.
I really, really liked the first one. Wasn't super thrilled. Like, the second one's okay. And I did like the third one more than the second one, but not more than the first one. So, but they were fun. I found footage horror movies. So I've been watching some of those.
Have you seen, I think it's Godforsaken? Mm-mm. It's a fan footage movie where a woman decides to not be dead at her funeral anymore.
Ooh.
Yeah. She's just like, I'm done with that. And people are like, what? And then all pandemonium breaks loose. And that's where we're going with the movie. Because, of course, people with cameras want to come up and see what's going on.
Of course. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, because aside from that, because I think Tubi has like a found footage category. Mm-hmm. At least it's showing for me now because I've watched a few. But I also did 13 Sherwood Avenue. That one was okay.
I've heard of that one. Yeah.
And then
you should do. Mm-hmm. What was that one we did for
Missing and Searching?
Yes, those. Missing but I was. I think it was my birthday or your birthday. The Jayam.
The Haunted Asylum.
The Haunted Jayam Haunted Asylum. I think it's on Prime.
Okay.
Go check it out. It's terrifying.
Ooh, I love getting Rex for found footage movies because there are some really, really not great ones, and I don't like wasting my time with those.
We're getting a new Blair Witch, and I don't know how to feel about it because it's such a mixed bag with the first three.
I was not a fan of the first one. I was very, very pissed off finished the first one, and this was like
I love the first
one. 90s, and it was still like. It was before it was revealed that it wasn't real. And so we had on like a bootleg cassette. Someone knew someone who knew someone. Mm-hmm. And so that final shot, and I was like, what? What the fuck?
I did not like it the first time I saw it because I was a child and I was a very harsh critic, as we all know. But like I rewatched it last year or this year for something, and I was like, it's not bad, but also I've seen some really bad found footage now. And so I can appreciate where they were coming from in 98 as opposed to some stuff that went down 2 years ago.
It's fair enough. I think that it's not the best found footage film I've seen, it's not the worst either. Out of the three, that's my favorite. The second one is my least favorite.
I love the second one. It was so different and all the wall. I was like, what is happening?
They were like, we didn't find no footage. We're just out here. And I was like, okay, girl.
Do your thing.
Oh, that's so funny. No. But yeah, I didn't watch any other Blair Witches after that. But let's see, what else did I watch? I watched The Blackwell Ghost, and that one's on Prime. That one, it was really, really well made where I'm watching it and I was like, wait, is this like a legit documentary? What the fuck did I thought this was a found footage horror movie. This looks real. So it was done very well, and there's like a whole bunch others after that. Like there's like six of these movies, Blackwell Ghost movies.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, I don't know if I want to watch. I probably will because they're all under an hour and a half.
Have you seen Missing and Searching?
I have not. No.
Sorry, you need to watch both of those films. Yes.
Okay. Missing is on Netflix. The callbacks to the first one, which is Searching, are so minor. It won't be too upsetting.
Oh, okay.
But if you're like me, you want to see things in order. Searching is on FX. So if somebody has like the app, you can get their password and watch that. Because I definitely did that a couple weeks ago because I wanted to see them in order, even though people said they don't connect. And I'm happy I did because I got the callbacks.
They do connect. They do a little bit.
There's a couple of like... The jokes are the jokes. If you get them, fine. If you don't get them, they're still working on a different level. Yeah. But knowing what they were doing, I was like, ha, ha, I would have missed this and I've been pissed. Like,
I found Searching at the $5 bin in Walmart and I was very happy about it.
Did you get me a copy? That was the real question.
No, I didn't know you found it.
Okay, I see how this is. Our third season's our last season.
You we gotta get send me a list of things I need because I look every time I go. I don't always buy, but I look. That's where I also found the later version of Salem's Lot with Rob Lowe. I like that better than the original.
I never got to see it because it's never anywhere. And I'm so mad it was in an Arkansas Walmart when I went out of here everywhere looking for it. But no, speaking of $5 movies, when we were at Midsummer Scream this weekend and Jazz, Girl That's Scary, was like DVDs because there was a DVD booth next to their table. And she went over there randomly and got the new Candyman for $5.
I mean, I already have it. But damn.
No, and we went to the Target later that night because we needed other suitcases because some of us bought too much stuff. And they were selling it for $10 there. And I'm like, girl, $5. And I almost got it for $10 at Target. But I was like, no, I don't need another suitcase. I'm one of the few that don't need another one. Let me stop. Because I have like a bag. My suitcase put on 4 pounds while we were there.
That's so awesome. Because
they weighed at the airport. And I was like, oh, she's gotten heavier. Oh. And it's mostly t-shirts, a shot glass, and like stuff for my keyring. But still, like I was like, 4 pounds? Oh, this is awkward. Oh,
like, I think that's awesome. You had fun. Yeah. Spend that money. Treat yourself. Whatever.
Right?
Right.
My credit cards are like, guess what?
Fuck like, capitalism. That's why I have credit cards.
My credit cards and I are in like a malignant relationship where I'm living my best life and they're under my wig doing chaos.
Yeah, I love that analogy.
That's so funny. All right. Well, I want to thank you both, Trent and Sheree, for being here again and talking a little bit about this movie and a little bit about Tom Cruise and shitting on Scientology and all the other rabbit holes. It has been a fucking blast. So thank you so much for being here. And
thanks for having us. We love it over here.
Yes,
thank
absolutely.
You for having us anytime, like literally anytime. And like Sheree said, we cover mostly the like horror, sci-fi horror, that kind of thing. So it's great to get out of our bubble.
Nice.
and do something that's different every once in a while. So please, anytime, we'll get drunk.
We watch
with you
other movies.
People absolutely.
There are other movies? There are other ones?
What? I don't know. Absolutely. You guys are always welcome back. So, and let's see, where am I on my notes? Because my other monitor shit out on me and I've been having issues down here. But anyway, so everyone make sure you check out their podcast, A Nightmare on Fear Street, which can be found on a podcast player near you. Of course, thank you to all my lovely bubblies for listening today and support the writers. Check the episode description. There are links on ways to help out, donate. There's like striking tacos to make sure the people protesting are still getting fed. And it's fucking tacos, right? Like, woohoo, tacos. But
everybody loves tacos.
Yes.
Everyone loves tacos.
Support the writers, because without writers, there's nothing.
Like, exactly.
Literally, your favorite TV show, even reality TV show, has writers involved in the editing of that show.
Mm-hmm.
So like, mm-hmm. support your fucking writers, and like, yeah, like I it just blows my mind.
I
was seeing TikToks, this was actors more so than writers that I saw, but showing their residuals as sometimes like negative. That's wild. Mm-hmm. These people are making billions of dollars off of the backs of these people, and they're not paying them shit.
Mm-mm. Yep.
Support writers.
Yeah,
they get to run away with their stuff and put it on streamers and things. Like the person, I don't know if it's the creator or the head writer of The Bear, and The Bear is popular. The Bear is making millions. That person was living below the poverty line and had to like borrow like a suit to wear to the Emmys. And I'm just like, this is not okay. This is not okay. As somebody who's an aspiring television writer, part of the reason I can't apply for a lot of these fellowships and things is because they want you like 6 days a week, all day, all night. And so when you have time for another job, because they're not paying you any money.
Yeah.
But they want you in LA. And I'm just like, I can't afford LA and to not work in LA.
And like, you see these, the stories, the screenshots, it just, everything just gets worse and worse and worse. I saw one thread about someone's like, you know, when you live in LA and say you get hired to write on a series that films maybe in Canada, they will pay you $4,000 and then that's it. Even if you go on to continue to write for that show for multiple seasons. So that's what this person was saying. And I was like, holy fuck. That's insane.
I forgot which actor it was, but he's a Black actor. So of course people were going to fight with him no matter what he said. But he was talking about how when he gets cast in a show that's not in California, because he lives in California like a lot of actors do, that means he has to pay rent at his home where his wife and his children are, and also a place to stay where they're filming it. Mm-hmm. And then he has to, like, he can't have a permanent place there because you don't know when the show gets canceled or not. And so he has to, like, pay rent in both places and then, like, move back in between and then come back. And people are like, why don't you just get an Airbnb for the time you need it? Why don't you just get a second home? It's like, because I don't make enough. Did I mm-hmm. not see what I made last year while working on 9 shows?
I get so mad. I get so angry.
Like, same.
When people are like, because I saw, what's her name? The black comedian, Ghostbusters female
remake. Leslie Jones. She had a very good moment.
Her TikTok moment. Fucking loved it. She was like, went in on the, she was like, I'll fucking block you. And I was like, yes, queen. But she was like, you don't, there's such a lack of empathy that people think that anyone asking for more money is saying that these other jobs don't matter. Cause like, people are apparently commenting on her stuff being like, well, teachers need more money or this. Yes.
Everybody does.
Yeah. Said, yes. Please join the fight because we will have you. Yes.
Everyone should be able to afford to live. And that's the problem. It's because mm-hmm. we've gotten to this place now where people are like, we need to keep the higher class and the middle class so we can all feel like shit and starve to death. I'm like, for whomst? For mm-hmm. why? Didn't we liberate ourselves supposedly? And I'm saying we and liberate supposedly, unquestioned marks, from like the other colonizers so we can like do better. And here we are now being like, let's keep that same message going. Mm-hmm. And for whom? Nobody wants to learn. I'm tired of let the aliens take me. If the aliens are listening, beam me up. I've been waiting for you. I know I ignored your calls during COVID times. We're still in COVID times. Clearly nothing's going to get better. So I might as well go ahead and do this now. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to leave. I will work for food.
Yes, exactly. But anyways, we've made this podcast like 3 hours long.
This is you guys do the Midwest goodbye so well. I love it so much. It's perfect. So we'll go ahead and yes, thanks again to you, Trent and Sheree, for being here. To the listeners, always hit my fucking earbuds. Talk too much with my hands. So anyway,
I love it.
Bye.
If you're enjoying this podcast, be sure to let me know by rating and reviewing wherever you get your podcast fix. Follow me on Twitter at Streaming Bubble. Find me on Facebook and Instagram as My Streaming Bubble. Have thoughts, suggestions, questions, or want to be tolerated? Email me at mystreamingbubble@gmail.com. If you want to show your love and support for this little old podcast in monetary form, search My Streaming Bubble over at buymeacoffee.com and buy me a cheese wedge. And if you want to take that love and support to the next level, head over to Redbubble, where you can find and purchase My Streaming Bubble merch. All monetary support goes right back into this podcast, from new recording equipment to night cheese. Thanks for your support and keep streaming.
Ba 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 la 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 la.
Oh, good. I laugh.